You mentioned that a lot of your reflection on self-determination come out of your anti-war organizing,
mm-hmm.
and you addressed it briefly, but could you say more? Like, what things have come up? Like, how do these discussions of self-determination come up? And what conclusions, like, have you drawn? Like, I know you said at the beginning you don't want to give any answers, but as someone who's, I think a lot of us here are involved in anti-war organizing, mm-hmm. and we're attracted to this workshop because of that linkage, so... if you can just say more.
Sure. I guess the thing that came up about the self-determination is that I feel like it's just too easy of a thing to say, and that it doesn't. I feel sort of offended sometimes when people are, especially people from answer groups like that, who are saying that they're totally for. Al Sader or something, because he's against the United States, I think there's a lot of assumptions in anti-war organizing that people are sort of on the same page when they're talking about self-determination, and that we're all in agreement on things. And I mean, this is a problem in the United States in general. I think people don't want to get critically engaged in intellectual discussions about things. So what has ended up happening a lot is that we'll do these anti-war, it's a group called the Anti-War Forum that does like educational forums around the war. And what'll, bless you, happen is that the kind of work we've been doing I've found kind of very disempowering, because we'll do these sort of slideshows about how bad things are in Iraq. And I think it's important maybe to get that information out, but at the same time, it seems like it's a lot of pictures of men with guns. There are United States soldiers with guns, and then there are Iraqi men with guns. And this is a big thing that's happening, obviously, and it's a really, really important thing. But what ends up happening is a lot of people who come to these things, I think we end up getting in these sort of geopolitical intellectual, like how bad everything is. You know, everything's really bad, and we need to support the people's right to self-determination in Iraq. And I don't see how, like, just saying that is actually being very supportive. Not many of us are going over to Iraq. We're not sending money over to people in Iraq. I don't see how really, like, tangibly we're doing anything to help people in Iraq. So in that sense, like, I think... We really should be focusing more on the lack of self-determination in the United States and how that's actually affecting the people in Iraq, and how we don't have very democratic systems in place, and even within anti-war organizing, I don't think there are a lot of, you know, that is not very democratic sometimes, and that it would be impossible for us really to help people in, like the thing that we can most do, and this is what I thought, you know, what people were saying yesterday in the international solidarity thing, was that we really, if we're not actually going to be doing anything like tangible for people in Iraq, the most we can do is work on stuff here, right? And so I'm not sure exactly what that is, but I think we need to figure out our own self-determination, why that's not working here, and what we can do about changing our own system, which obviously is something that, you know, takes a long time and people get very impatient with, and that would actually be more helpful to people in Iraq than us showing like blood and gore and things like that. I don't know if that's
yeah. I would I think one of the reasons this workshop is interesting is because the term self-determination is so different. And I think you were talking more about how it's different in different political contexts. Like, you talked about the Marxist definition, about the anarchist definition, the UN definition, et cetera. But I think what's more important when we approach this term is what is the popular definition in these different contexts. Like, when you go to a person on the street, the average person, and you say you're for self-determination, what does that mean to them? Because I'll use, like, just people from Montreal, they can speak better to this, I think. But you go to a Francophone Quebecer and you say, I'm an anarchist and I'm for self-determination. They're like, oh, so are you part of the Parti Québécois? You know? Or, but you go like 50 kilometers to Kanasataki and you say you're for self-determination. It means an entirely different thing. And I think that it's a term that we have to approach based on like what the actual popular usage of it is in the different contexts, more than what our own political definition of that term is. And that's why it's a difficult term to use, and that's why I think this discussion is important. And I'd definitely be very interested in hearing what people from Montreal have to think about the Canadian context and like being anarchists and anti-nationalists, and, but also anti-chauvinists and anti things like the Clarity Act, which for people who aren't familiar from the U.S. is an act that was just passed into law saying that the appointed Supreme Court of Canada has the ultimate authority to decide if the province of Quebec can secede or not. It's not any popular referendum in Quebec, even if it's a vast majority, ultimately doesn't have the power to secede from Canada. It has to be through the Supreme Court of Canada.
I think, you know, when you say self-determination in Quebec, it could mean you're associated with the sovereignist movement. It's a basic point. But I think when we're throwing around that word, those of us who are active is like in context of solidarity struggles elsewhere. And And interestingly enough, like I think a lot of people, like it's not just the anarchists anymore, but just in general in Quebec, people consider themselves post-sovereignists. Like it's not even an important question really anymore.
Yeah, it depends for who, but
yeah.
And where.
More, it's less and less. The relevance of the question is less and less striking than it used to be. Like it used to be really like at the center of political discussion.
It's something that touches on what you were saying about your definitions, because there's a front page article from the Institut Nouveau Monde, remember that?
Yeah.
There's a front page article of Youth, and Bernard Landry, he's the Premier of Quebec, he's a sovereignist.
Ex-Premier.
And he came to speak, and the Youth were saying, well, we're beyond sovereignty, because in an age of globalization, what does Quebec sovereignty really mean when, if we're going to replace English bosses or Canadian bosses with Quebec bosses? And that's stuff anarchists have been saying for years, but it's like popular now, right? So, generalization.
At the same time, in another, like for other young people in Quebec, there's like an increasing feeling of this need, like really tied in a nationalist analysis, you know what I'm talking about? And some of it is really rooted in some like fascist ideas.
Yeah, exactly.
Not all of it, but some of it.
Yeah, I mean, Nazism can be seen as a national self-determination.
Yeah, and they're like seeing themselves as like almost revolutionary fighters, like who are like, you know, fighting for a good cause.
Which is a bad cause.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It kind of brings me back to this kind of goes back to what I was thinking about saying. Because, I mean, one thing I wanted to say before I talk about what I was thinking about saying is just that I understand what you say about how we have to build self-determination here, and that's how we could do the most to help the people of Iraq. But at the same time, there's a part of me that can't buy into that, because it's so easy for us to say, let's work on local issues. And I think that the urgency of war and occupation, where people are like dying, I just don't feel that there's time to sit and institute our own self-determination. Like, I think we do have to put our solidarity into practice and do something concretely, but what we can do, I mean, that's a whole other conversation. But for the problem that I have always felt, and I know I'm not the only one who's thought of this, with self-determination, is what happens when there's two groups who are fighting for their self-determination, and it conflicts. And I mean, that, like the fascists, like in Africa, we were talking about Africa at lunch because it never comes up, or very rarely comes up in these circles, because it's so hard to talk about self-determination and solidarity. If we look at Darfur right now, and I don't know if people know a little bit about what's going on in Darfur, but basically, of course, oil is involved, as it often is. You know, it's a country where the French came in and erected borders all over the place. And in Africa, there's a lot of struggles and self-determination between pastoralists and between farmers in West Africa and the Sahel and the Sahara. And so you have the farmers who are saying, we have the right to be on this land and we have the right to farm. And, you know, our self-determination, of course, is like bound to us being able to sustain ourselves, and this is our land. And then you have the pastoralists who are saying, well, your farming is destroying our grazing territories and it's limiting our right to self-determination. So when you have those two in conflict, what do? And is it even a useful concept? That's just an open question. Yeah.
Answers.
Bueller?
For me, I mean, it's something, and all of these conversations have been really useful, and that I'm kind of feeling like my brain is in a little bit of a crisis, which is usually a good thing, because then something will come out of it, but it's kind of like, okay, maybe it's not what I thought. And but in the past, at least, when I talk about self-determination, it's tied in with the idea of freedom, because otherwise your self-determination is just a reaction to this is bad, my self-determination is to get rid of that bad, and that can create just a constant kind of state of just resisting without thinking about the creation part. So I think linking it to freedom, or seeing freedom as part of the definition, helps for me as well. There's something else I was going to say. I know, just agreeing with this point, I guess, that it, and putting it out as a question, and it's really tricky when someone says, my self-determination is this, and it is to have, you know, a fascist regime, where it's to have some, because, again, I do lean a little more towards the Marxist sense of our conditions are determined to a large extent. Not that we can't change them, not that we can't make them different, but we come in a context, and so there's not this absolute self-determination without that being influenced by who's around you and what ideas are around you. So, for example, there are some people, I mean, Cuba's a really tricky place, but there are some people in Cuba who really want, you know, to get rid of the government, and they would like something like the U.S., because they have this idea of what that means, and they have this idea of what's going on in society, and, you know, who am I to say that's, well, I live in the U.S., I can actually say that it's not what they think it is. But they have an idea, and so for them, that might be their self-determination, is to get rid of free education and all these different things, and have it's something that looks like the U.S. And that might play out very differently, and then they'll want another kind of self-determination once they have a situation that maybe looks more like the U.S. And then what would that, what is that self-determination? And so this is where my brain is kind of starting to circle right now, is it's kind of like, okay, maybe I should stop using self-determination so much, because it is so contextual that, you know, do you absolutely say whatever, you know, okay, whatever your desire is, I'm going to support it? I don't know, do you want to hurt me? Like, I'm not sure I want to support that desire. So it's not so easy to just say, yes, I support. But, you know, I'm not a Leninist. I'm not going to tell people you can't have that desire. It's a, but we do want to set up framework as well when we think about society and imagining different kinds of societies we'd want to live in, or kind of communities we create among ourselves. We do have certain things about people silencing other people, or kind of racism and sexism, and, you know, if a woman is attacked in a community by a man in that community, we deal with it. We don't just say, well, that's, you know, that man's self-determination to, you know, kind of like to create.
I mean, I think the PGA hallmarks are pretty good. I kind of like their they don't even use the term self-determination, but I like the hallmarks because I think there's sort of an ethical, moral sense of, well, we can say this. We're not going to say a whole lot, but we can at least have these principles of something. And it's not like being bossy, but it's saying that this is what we believe. And so I think that's a little bit different from the Marxist-Leninist stuff, where you're kind of like, this is the program, and, you know, if you're not going to go along with it, you just don't know what you want, really, Wayne.
Yeah, well, to me, it's a very interesting presentation, putting self-determination in a broader context than just national self-determination. But thinking in terms of context, mostly I think of self-determination, I use it as self-determination from somebody. That is, somebody's now oppressing you and you want self-determination, right, to determine your own conditions. The problem is quotations here, the reference, the last three words, without outside influence, is absolute nonsense, of course. I don't know why they write that. It didn't mean just, how can it be without outside influence? And it seems to me the main thing for the United people in the United States, certainly in terms of Iraq, the first thing is self-determination means against U.S. imperialism. The United States should get out of Iraq. And that is what I mean when I, generally when I say I'm for self-determination for Iraq. Now that's separate from the question of, do I have an opinion, who I prefer? Well, I like the Workers' Communist Party of Iraq, which organizes women's organizations and union organizations and so forth. But that's ultimately for the Iraqis to determine. Our main job is to oppose U.S. domination. You know, and that's the same thing with, it's wrong. Anglophone Canada shouldn't be dominating Francophone Canada. They have a right to decide. How that relates to the Indian, the Native Americans, and so forth, I'm not saying that is a tricky problem, but that it's not for others to determine. to be.
Can I ask you, you're saying anti-imperialism is self-determination? I'm sorry, it was just a question because I'm not understanding.
Yes,
exactly.
And essentially, yes. Because that the what's oppressing the nations, what's keeping them from determining themselves, is the oppression by the imperialists. Therefore, to get the imperialists out, which our job is to oppose U.S. imperialism, will give them, certainly it's one element of it. Not saying that's, if you determine self-determination meaning everything, determining yourself, having freedom, is obviously a lot more. But certainly one key element, which is certainly our job in the imperialist countries, our job in imperialist countries is not to be picking among the various tendencies in Iraq. Not for us to be supporting, God knows, the various misogynist fundamentalists and so forth, and praising them as even the ISO does, or the or ANSWER and so forth, but to say, the United States should get out. We oppose the United States. They should determine themselves.
Yeah.
She wanted to...
I was just thinking that you're making the same mistake vis-a-vis Iraq that you are vis-a-vis Canada. I do think it's for outsiders to say they support the right for self-determination of indigenous people in Canada. Absolutely. And I think our opposition of imperialism always has to be based on a principle of self-determination, which means that we're supporting the right of the sub-communities, of the nations within, of the individuals within who are struggling, so that we avoid aligning ourselves with the dominant voices in that society in supporting the anti-imperial struggle. Not that we shouldn't be supporting the anti-imperial struggle, not that we shouldn't be non-partisan vis-a-vis the different political parties who are struggling for power inside, but we need to avoid in our stressing, our in giving too much prey, in not recognizing that there are struggles for self-determination within those struggles, and we have to be very careful about that.
The question is, who's the we? That is, we anarchists should be supporting indigenous people, and we anarchists should be supporting the workers and the women in Iraq. But we North Americans, or the Anglophone government, we're not for them supporting the indigenous people. We're not for the United States government who would want to change their position that they should endorse this or that tendency in Iraq. But yes, we anarchists, yes, we revolutionaries, we should show international solidarity and so forth. But I'm not for calling on the U.S. government now to support the democratic groups of this group or that group or taking side, and not for the Canadian government to call on them to be the supporters of the Native Americans. So I agree with you, I think, essentially.
Well, just on East Timor, like I used to do a lot of work in East Timor, and just for background, East Timor, it was expressed in terms of self-determination, the right of the East Timorese to be free of Indonesian occupation. The East Timorese were demanding that international, through the UN, through Australian troops, almost US troops, come in because of how brutal the situation was. And I remember I was in New Zealand at the time, and where there's a stronger movement there, and a lot of the Marxist groups and things are saying, you know, like we should have workers' brigades go into East Timor, and that way you can finesse away out of the argument of supporting the UN coming in. And yeah, sure, but we have absolutely no capacity for that. Like, our solidarity is very limited. We feel good about it or whatever, but we're just not capable of doing it. And, you know, I was in an odd situation there, but every East Timorese I talked to said, look, they're killing us. Mm-hmm. Australians coming in have credibility. We want them. So I'm not saying that to draw any big conclusion, but just that it's just something that immediately came to mind because you know, yeah. Similar thing with Afghanistan as well. A lot of the left Trotskyist groups were like, well, the Soviets are better staying in than leaving because you're going to leave. I'm not going to say that's similar to what happened with East Timor, but it's just another complication that we should keep in mind.
Yeah, I mean, that just reminds me of, there are a lot of students from different countries in Africa at the college where I teach, and I remember getting in an argument with somebody about Liberia from ANSWER, who was saying, oh, well, you know, absolutely the U.S., the U.N. should stay out of this situation, and then talking to students who were saying, no, we really need some help here. We feel like we've been abandoned by the international community completely, and we're always being abandoned by the international community. And they were actually saying they wanted some kind of, like human rights help. So, yeah, that, I think, can be a really, like, complicated thing. And the person from ANSWER said, well, they really don't know what you know, that same kind of like, well, they don't really know what's good for them kind of thing. Like, you know, when clearly like people in their families have been killed and it was a pretty crucial issue for them at the time. Yeah.
I'm really going to switch.
Okay. No, I was just thinking one thing that keeps coming up is like self-determination and solidarity. If we're doing solidarity work, at what point do we impose our own values and what struggles do we support? Mm-hmm. And what Jaggi was talking about, for some strange reason, made me think about Tibet, because I've always done a little bit of work on Tibet. It's never been like my huge focus, but I've been doing stuff with Tibetans for quite some time, and I'm not a Buddhist. I don't share the same principle of nonviolence as they do. There's a lot of people who just don't pay any attention to Tibet or don't see it as a struggle for self-determination anymore, because the majority of Tibetans, and that is changing now, but most of them refuse to take up arms. And most of them, their entire like being is founded on principles of nonviolence. So for me, if I'm going to be in solidarity with them and ask, you know, but the principle of self-determination into practice through my solidarity, that means I'm working with a movement that doesn't believe in taking up arms, which is not what I believe in. But for me, it's just, I think it's interesting to think about what choices we make if we really are doing the kind of work we would like to be doing.
Okay, so now I'm going to say something. So it's just like, it's a way to, oh my God, I'm having a hard time with English today. Anyways, it's in Canada, there's just, I don't even know the words in English to explain it, but I'll try my best. It's like the, it's comme un tribunal de médiation musulman.
Sharia?
Truth and Reconciliation Commission?
No.
Non, c'est la charia, c'est l'instigation du tribunal de la charia pour les médiations familiales au Canada.
Okay. Introducing like, Sharia courts?
Yeah.
In Canada. So this is being pushed forward by some Muslim people in Canada and Muslim communities in Canada. And I work for a feminist organization, and so obviously there's a response to this, and the organization is being asked like to take a position on this and da-da-da-da. So, and it's not all Muslims that support this idea in Canada, but there are a good support for this. So, so how do we see self-determination in this context? Like, because I'm in general, like, if we talk in general, and that's where it comes problematic, but I am in general all for, like, self-determination of, like, immigrants and refugees within, like, the new community they live in or whatever, and for second, third, fourth generation, you know? But, like, in this context, like, what? How do we deal with this? Like, I'm not, like, gonna use law, you know, this way of dealing with it, neither moral, neither religion. So how do we deal with it? And as like, as much as we want to respect the right to self-determination and to respect the right of like, whatever, like cultural and religious tradition to be perpetuated in the new society they live in, whatever, I don't see this as something positive for women in Canada. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so like the only thing that I can throw as like a potential, not an answer, but like just an idea to work on is like that maybe in the term self-determination it shouldn't be implicit that it is anti-oppressive. Mm-hmm. So like that way, like I don't know, because like self-determination of Muslim communities in Canada to like implement Sharia tribunals here would be oppressive for women. So, but would women define it as oppressive?
Yeah, that's
some of them. Yes, some of them no. Yeah. So it's really like complex.
It's very complex.
But I would like to hear people on this if people are interested, because I don't know what to do.
I think sometimes there's situations of like civil war, which means like two sides of the human community are at civil war. So I don't want to sound too much like those answer people, but you know, you got to sometimes take a side, and sometimes you can take a side with full comfort. So I'm not going to address like Sharia in Canada in general, but there's a civil war, not a hot war, although in some places it is, within Asia, Muslim communities, but also in India as well, between secularists and religious people, and there are certain touchstone issues, and it's easier for us to choose the side, and to get behind them. It's not going to be neat or anything, but it allows us that perspective. So Muslim women have spoken out in Canada against those courts. There was a demonstration in Vancouver, but
no, in Montreal too. I know.
Yeah. So I think we should get behind them. I mean, I'm sort of saying this from a certain level of comfort because I feel like I can because I come from a certain culture where it's like in India, secularism versus religious fundamentalism are up against each other. And in India, for example, they brought in, it's called the Shahbano case, where there would be separate laws to deal with Muslims. Mm-hmm. And secularists are like, let's get rid of that. Like, that's horrible. Why do we ever agree to that? And this is a very strong, relevant conflict to a lot of the struggles we're dealing with, Palestine, Iraq, et cetera, et cetera. It's not necessarily the priority, for example, in Iraq right now to, you know, jump in also on this, but to anticipate that. And in places where it is full up conflict to deal with that. Now, interestingly enough, some of the Muslim secularists, people from Muslim countries that are secularists are often so ultra-secularist that we're uncomfortable. For example, ban the hijab. Women who wear the hijab, you know, that's it. I know in Toronto there's a famous incident where at an International Women's Day event, Iranian women who were secularists went to a table where they had information and women wore, you know, the hijab and, like, overturned their table. Yeah, said, you don't belong in our space.
Actually, if I could just interject to that.
Really? Just, oh, my.
Where at an International Women's Day event, Iranian women who were secularists went to a table where they had information and women wore, you know, the hijab and, like, overturned their table. Yeah, said, you don't belong in our space.
Actually, if I could just interject to that.
Really?
Oh, my God. Just for context on that, the women who were tabling International Women's Day were official representatives of the state of Iran. Oh. That was the more specific context on that.
Oh, okay, well.
But the expression of it was very much, well, like, you're oppressed by having veils or hijab. I'm getting off on topic here, but the basic is, like, there are these, like, civil conflict-like situations where we can quite comfortably be allies to the people who are fighting. And keep in mind, too, that U.S. foreign policy has deliberately been set up to eliminate these secularists. Like, Iranian leftists were eliminated. Iraqi leftists were, like, destroyed. The Workers' Communist Party and others could be stronger, but they were just destroyed. The lists, Indonesia, the lists that were given by the CIA to Suharto, like 500,000 to a million dead in the Communist parties. Not that the communists are always our friends, but they do represent a certain politics that we could be a little bit more comfortable with when it comes to the social, like, these secular issues. So, and now we're left with a situation where people assume that the self-determination of Muslim culture means that, you know, we would have imposed Sharia, or we would have women who can't drive or whatever, as if that's natural to a culture. And there's always been an Islamic tradition and other traditions of dissent against that, and very vibrant as well. But sometimes it's just wacky, like in Turkey, where if you wear hijab, you can't wear hijab. Or now in France, now they're banning hijab in schools, and it's an overcompensation. But anyways, so... Well, I know, for example, at Palestinian Demo in Montreal, there are, like, Hezbollah supporters. And Hezbollah is seen by a lot of Palestinian other people as a very righteous group. They've done amazing resistance. And when they march, they're like, Allahu Akbar. And I was with other, you know, Desis, Indians, who are Muslim and non-Muslim, and we were shutting them down. We're like, no. Don't chant Allahu Akbar in our demonstrations. We don't believe that's anywhere, you know. And we were supported by, just for people from Montreal, Samer's mom, Samer Al-Atrash's mom, who, you know, who's a very devout Muslim, who wears hijab, who's a very, you know, a woman who stands up for the dignity of where she comes from and her religion, but agreed with us, right? Like, and so those alliances can be built, but I think a lot of it in certain situations have to be mediated through the people who are from those communities, who are secularists. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I know the, you know, feminist organization you talk about will get into a lot of trouble if they do it themselves, but if they can align themselves with
yeah, well, the Iranian women asked the organization and refer to do it, so. With them, anyways.
This touches on a lot of this. I just came back from Beirut, where I went to an international anti-war, anti-globalization conference, and precisely these issues were what came up, because what happened was it seemed to be mainly Trotskyists who were organizing the conference, and what they seemed to want to do was embrace Islamic resistance in the anti-war, anti-globalization movement and do so publicly. And they really pissed off the local organizers,
because the local organizers have been struggling against, they've been struggling to develop this platform, No War, No Dictatorship, which is simultaneously anti-imperial and is supporting the local struggles for refugee rights, for women's rights, for queer liberation in that context. And what this outside group did was, you know, just buy into this, you know, any blow against the empire is, you know, for liberation, and really allied themselves and gave power to Hezbollah, the Communist Party, and PSP in that context of Lebanon, and in that really undermine a lot of the work that they've been doing for the last 2 years, which is to try and say that we don't have to wait until Israel is, you know, no more, and the United States Empire is destroyed before we can work on local oppression. And what we need to do is address these right now in our context, and that we are part of a global movement. And what these outsiders did was really help to legitimate the groups have been saying, no, we have to wait on all our internal things, show a united face to the outside world in our struggle against the local empire and the global empire.
So I think we have about 5 minutes left, but I was just thinking about this again in terms of the classroom. I was really interested in what Sarah was saying yesterday about not pushing the issue of homosexuality in Palestine. And I think that's like such a difficult...
What did she say?
Well, that it shouldn't be pushed because of religious values and
stuff
in a public context. And then I think Mark Lance had a good response that one-on-one, you can have really good conversations with people about that. But I have really mixed feelings about that myself, and I kind of... Because I think in some ways, if I'm thinking about self-determination of in terms of myself, and I have my own principles, like I feel like if they're subsumed because I'm trying to be nice, that's a problem too. And I think people do that too much. I think a lot about Martin Luther King, who's still kind of... people have kind of used him in the wrong ways, but he's still kind of a heroic person to me. And a lot of the things that he would say was, why wait? Like, the time is now. And I think sometimes, like, I think the respect for cultural differences is really important. But I also think that ethics and morals can be, like, subjective, depending on cultures and so forth. But I think if you're always trying to be, and, like, I think this becomes a problem a lot, like, in... just in circles I know of, and there have been a lot of problems in Philadelphia over organizing and racism and sexism and issues like that. But I think what happens is that people don't say what they think, for fear of being, they want to be polite, they don't want to get anybody upset, they don't want to say the wrong thing. And what happens is nobody says anything, and nobody... you know, people don't question each other, and they don't, like, work it through critically, like so that... in class again, like instead of avoiding the issue of racism, like I'll you know, try to ask students what they think, or we'll just plunge into the issue of racism, or we'll plunge into the issue of religion, and we'll pull themes out and try to, like, think it through. But I think trying to, like, avoid things like getting into conflicts out of an overabundance of cultural respect, like I think there's a... And the idea of just waiting, well, I should wait till things are better, till relationships are better, I think sometimes it ends up that it just never happens. And, like, if it's an issue that is really troubling at the time, that I think it's honest to say that you think something is... I've had a lot of Muslim students that I've had really long conversations about, and I've gained more respect for them about their religion, and I think they've gained more respect for people who aren't religious, but I really do question some of the ways that women are treated in religious societies, and I really do have strong feelings about it. And I feel like kind of like shutting up all the time is, and being nice isn't such a good thing either.
Thank you.